an awful lot of these are quite down. But this, the black line is just what the dollars are. The dollar's gone up. If you just take a trend line then, imports have gone up during that time. That's been about a year to a year and a half, while exports have gone down. So you can see the tremendous impact that the dollar has had on us this year, along with some slowing economies around the world, namely China. It's had an impact, and that's one, if not the main reason, why exports are down, imports are up this year. And as our prices have gotten high over the years, started to soften a little bit, but we're still priced fairly high around the world, so we can detract imports. This is, it's a little dated, it's a year old, but it just shows the variations in the world markets. If you take the blue line, the production line, you can see that going back to 1993, how production of global beef has gone up, and then went to about 2005, it peaked and started coming back down. Price kind of kept up with production for very many years. You had the Great Recession there. You can see what happened to prices. But then when production dropped 2 or 3 years ago, you can see where that gave us that next lift in prices. So it's both supplies and prices and demand all gets factored into this. But you can see that it's been a real positive price trend, even with production up, production down through the years. This is GDP, gross disposable money, annual or just capita growth, per annual growth on per capita money. What's happened around the world? The red line, the top line, is China. You can see a cumulative growth in income, if you will, up 250% since the year 2000. Next one is India. It's got about 100% doubled. Probably the next one is one that really... we really like, and that's emerging markets. The smaller countries that have never done anything and never had much money, they're really starting to grow. And there's a lot of people in these emerging markets that are going to have money to spend someplace, and we think that's going to help us. But all the way through, even Japan there on the bottom has still had some growth over time, but a lot of these countries with a lot of population that never had a lot of money are both growing in population and growing in wealth. You can put this is per capita income and meat consumption. So, you know, if you go up and to the right, and there's some countries, and you can see in this slide that at the top is the U.S. As far as income. And you can see as income grows along the right, your meat consumption rises. Now, the old saying is that, hey, people come a little, don't have any money, what do they eat? How do they get the protein? Any ideas? Kind of beans and rice, right? Get a little bit more money. What's the kind of the meat protein they come into first? Yeah, it's a little early. Probably fish, because where a lot of these countries are located, it's readily accessible. Then we go to the poultry side. A little bit more money. They start eating some poultry, a little bit more money. Go to pork. And when they move up into this top tier, they go to beef. They like beef. They like what they can do for it, with it. So as you start getting more money, you can see more pork, poultry, and then beef being consumed around the world. And you can see Japan, China, you know, as growth increases, the beef consumption increases with it. So as we see this world growth go around the world, it's really important to what we do and what we can do. You know, we think the prices for the U.S. beef have gotten real high, and they have, you know, historically speaking. But you look at a country like China, their growth in prices matched ours all the way through. So even though we've gotten expensive on beef prices, really when you look at prices for beef around the world, namely China, some of these other countries, it's the same as it was in relationship, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. So not only have our beef prices gone up, but the rest of the world's gone up as quick, and that makes our beef around the world more affordable to consumers, and that's why we've seen some export growth happen. Who do we do things with? You look at global meat exporters, U.S. and Brazil are the big meat exporters around the world. In fact, when you combine those two, that's about 51% of the world's exports. EU, India, which is all beef, by the way, and this is broken down course, the blue is the beef, the red is pork, and the green is broilers. Goes EU, India, Canada, Australia, and then the other countries to a much lesser degree. Importers, who brings it in? Greater China. And of course, that's not a lot of beef, but it is a heck of a lot of pork and poultry. But you can see when the beef has came in, what kind of beef is it? 15% of the beef that's imported around the world is grain-fed. Of course, that's what we do. That's our market, a little bit of Canada. Grass-fed is about 71%. That's what most of the world produces. And the area that we've seen growth is mainly from India, buffalo, which is considered bovine, which is then considered beef. So you see that it's the big in, and it's been a wide range of product being brought in, but namely around the world, what moves is grass-fed beef. We think that imports into the U.S. is going to drop next year. We get a lot of our beef from Australia. They've gone through a drought, so their herd has been liquidated, much like ours was 2 or 3 years ago. And they're in El Nino this year, which is another dry year. It tends to go from El Nino to La Nina, which will be wet for the southern hemisphere. So as they come into more moisture, hopefully next year, they're going to start rebuilding their herd, and they'll probably drop imports into the U.S. and support beef prices around the world. Another way we can look at the kind of cattle that move around the world and where the growth has been, the top line is dairy growth, dairy cows. And that's really where any of the growth has occurred in the beef side, has been on the dairy side. You know, New Zealand, some of those countries have grown. When you look at beef cows globally, they've really dropped from 215 million head down to around 200 million head here in the last few years. So overall numbers have dropped, especially when you combine dairy and beef. Who produces meat then? Well, China is the biggest meat producer because they consume the most. And again, here's that, the blue is the beef. You can see it, they don't produce a lot of beef. They produce an awful lot of pork and some broilers. EU, kind of the same mix. US, of course, you'll see more on the beef side as you will Brazil. But you can see that a lot of the production's on the pork side and the broiler side. And beef, not as much. So again, a huge market coming up as that starts to change. Who's growing? Who's shrinking? If you look around the world, in 5-year production changes, India's had the big growth. And we don't know, of course, and again, that's buffalo. You get into religion problems if you start using the beef cows, the Brahma kind of cattle, that kind of changes. But Brazil has grown, China to a small degree, other countries, major countries have been flat. And you see drops in Canada, the EU, and the US, which a couple of those are pretty big beef producers. So a couple have grown, a lot of countries flat, a little bit smaller, but not much going on really. And of course there's the India export product. Probably a little bit different than Tom was trying to market here a few minutes ago, right? Okay, but you take a look at everything, and again, what's happened, you can see the decrease, 5-year changes in beef production, the big drop's been in grain-fed beef, and that's primarily due to the U.S. The increase has been in buffalo and grass-fed. But it's really, again, opens up a market for us. Remember, the world will want more grain-fed beef as they get more income coming in. So that's going to open up a market for us even further as we move ahead. Who's the consumers? Well, of course, China consumes a lot of product. They have a lot of people. You know, this isn't per capita, it's just how much they consume. EU is a big meat consumer. Probably something that surprises me. They're tied with us, the U.S., as the amount of meat that they consume. And again, that's kind of strung out through different kinds of proteins. Brazil, of course, we all knew as a country, they eat a lot of meat, especially on the beef side, but some of the others, especially on the poultry side. And you can see how Russia, Mexico, Japan, India strings out. But especially Russia, you think there's some, it's a big country, a lot of people, there's probably some growth potential there as well. You know, we hear a lot about China and just some reasons why China is so important to people, why we focus so much on it. You know, they eat so much meat, number one. There's so many people. You look at their production over time in that big blue glob, if you will, their production has been fairly flat. Consumption continues to rise. So they're having to fill in that difference with imports. Now looking ahead, and we'll have a few slides here as we finish up, they'll kind of go through this a little bit more. We think that their consumption is going to continue to grow. We see them continuing to have a very difficult time producing any more than they do right now, and that should open up some markets. We're starting to see that on the pork side. If you've been reading some of the stories that China is starting to list more and more of the pork product, opening up this market a little bit more, some ownership here in the U.S., you're starting to see that happen. Now, of course, some of this is all of it to China, is if you don't have the rectopamine, paling. But the pork producers so far are saying, hey, I'm going to gain enough more. There's a group of producers saying that I'm going to do that. You know, it's very possible that China's going to come to us with the same kind of a deal at some point. Of course, that would be Optiflex, Optiflex here, and we'll decide what we do with it. But any opening that we have, China probably initially, at least initially, will be tied to certain conditions being tested for certain additives, and we'll have to see what the reaction of the consumer, of the producers are at that point. Why do we get so excited? Here's what we have now: 1.3 billion people. 600 million of those are peasant farmers, just out there with a couple cows, a couple pigs, what have you. Per capita income in 2000 was $1,000. 2012, $3,350, and is forecast, even with moderate growth in China, to increase to double in the next 5 years to over $6,000. Top 15% of the population, 5,000 plus, which is 150 million people. To put that in some perspective, the U.S. has 300 million people. So it's the equivalent of half of the U.S. doubling their income in the next 5 years. That'd be pretty exciting, wouldn't it? They still bring in a lot of pork. 83 pounds per person they consume of pork. And to contrast that to the U.S., we eat about 60 pounds per person of beef. So they're big pork eaters. Again, as they come more money, remember what we talked about, moving up that protein ladder. Can we get at least a share of that market moving ahead on the beef side? Middle class, in 2012, 300 million people, which again is the U.S. population, that's projected to grow to 640 million by the year 2022. So a big increase coming up. So closing here then, the tightening global beef supplies. You know, the world basically stopped producing additional beef in 2007. And the result has been rapid depreciation in beef prices. Prices have gone up sharply as the world has cried out for us to make more beef for them, get more production going on. You know, we're going to respond. I think the rest of the world was, but the money's out there for us. From 2012 to 2013, Chinese demand sucked up an additional 700,000 metric tons, that's in carcass weight, further straining the tight supplies. Chinese income, plus Hong Kong plus Vietnam imports topped a million metric ton in 2014. Now a little bit about this as we move on. Do you know any idea about what is the first or second per capita, biggest per capita beef consumer in the world? Any idea? U.S. is right there. Of course, Brazil is right there. But right there with them is Vietnam. Does that make a lot of sense to you? You know, as you see. Vietnam and Hong Kong fall very big. Where are they in relationship to China? Right? Just the dark, a boat ride across a little body of water in a dark night, right? China has us locked out of beef. They're still saying it's BSE, go figure. But they have us locked out. So what we found over the last year or two, a lot of beef was going into Hong Kong, Vietnam, and moving on the black market into China. Now, the Chinese government recognized that this year, along with some other products, and they've been a lot more tougher on cracking down on some of these folks bringing in beef from around the world illegally to China. So that's another reason why our exports have slowed a little bit. I've still talked to some people this year that's been in China, liked a steak they had at a high-end restaurant, asked the chef where the guy came from, and he said Thai. But it's not near the flow that it was a couple years ago. We'll see if China kind of opens that back up or they keep it choked down, but right now it's been a difficult market. U.S. cow herd supplies entered an expansion phase which will tighten, not anymore, which will grow supplies here over the next 2 to 3 years. With our carcass weights the way they were, and as quickly as we're moving into expansion phase, this year will be the tightest supplies of beef in the U.S. Next year or two will start to grow, so we are going to expand our beef production over the next couple of years, putting more beef on the market. Brazil and India are the only other producers actively expanding production right now. So we kind of got part of that market covered here. So in summary, tightening global supplies, increasing global demand, and price inflation. That's all very, very bullish, and one reason why we think that we're going to continue growth in the export market. This year, our exports lower due to a strong dollar. Unfortunately, with all the chaos around the world, the dollar remains a very strong, safe haven for money around the world. That's probably going to keep our dollar strong through the first into and not through the first quarter of next year. Long-term exports is higher to Asia. We see no reason to fade that. You know, global opportunities are great. We're talking billions of dollars of growth, not millions of dollars. It's going to be a big deal for us. Global potential for U.S. beef is very good. So with that, I don't know if you want to close it up or what you want to do. Take a few questions, that'd be great.
We do have some microphones out here in the walkways, which is going to be easier for people to hear. All right, you can raise your hand, I'll come get you. I might sort of just give you first question. I'm just curious if you can just walk through China, because I know that they are in discussions with Australia, Canada, other people probably before us. And I'm just curious, it's unfair to ask you to say when all of this is going to transpire, months, years, or whatnot, but can you just walk through how we get to having an open China market, and what's happening currently, and what's eventually going to happen?
It's pretty quiet, Jason, right now on the beef side. I think what's encouraging for us is the pork side and the way that they're starting to open up those markets to pork. We think if they say, hey, pork is okay, we'll work around the paleo issue, they're going to have to treat beef the same way. I think there's some political will there to do it now, finally. And as their people need more and more beef and they come into more and more income, I think they're going to demand for it, and it's going to start open. Time-wise, 3 years ago we would have told you 6 months, I'll tell you the same today. We don't know, so... Hopefully sooner rather than later. See?
I know there was some publicity a couple months ago about a lot of civil unrest in India. People concerned about cows going to slaughter and them trying to block roads and all that kind of stuff. That's always been a problem with the definition of a cow and a buffalo and that production. Have we gotten any more reading as to whether some of that supply could get cut off just for religious reasons in India?
Yeah, that's a great question. They had an election about a year ago, and the guy that was elected as, I don't know what you call him, premier, president, he ran on the platform that he was very strict, fundamentally, on cows were holy, they're not to be consumed, and didn't want to have any part of it. He was elected, kind of backed off that a little bit because the Hindu religion, of course, is practiced primarily over there, which believes that, but they also have a growing population of non-Hindus. So he wants to encourage that, encourage some of that growth. So he's backed off his pledge a little bit that he was going to completely cut off any kind or exporting, killing any kind of bovine, which includes the water buffalo. He's kind of backed off that a little bit, but here in the last couple months, there's been some some bad deals where people were suspected of, you know, eating beef. People came in and literally killed them. They just killed them today. Rumor has Town Square that you ate beef last night. So that's been a real struggle for us. We sense that India wants to kind of walk that fine line where buffalo is okay for some of the non-Hindu participants or consumers and continue to grow that export market around the world. But boy, there's a bunch of hardliners that don't have anything to do with it. So it's probably going to cap what they can do going forward. And it's going to be a very volatile situation, but one that everybody's very, very closely watching. Yes, sir.
Can you hear me okay? All right. I guess looking at the Cattle Facts dashboard over the last month, maybe a little bit longer, it seems like you've got more limit down than any increases with still being a short supply. What are you seeing for after the first of the year? I mean, are you guys, you know, it seems like we should be maintaining a little bit higher price in the feeders and stuff. What are you guys seeing coming?
Just as far as cattle prices?
Yeah.
I was afraid they're going to get into that. You know, I know you had somebody that that came and did a market forecast, and I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but we're struggling right now. Fed cattle prices all the way down to cow-calf. We think that this is going to be our high year for all those classes, and probably including beef. You know, this week we're going to try to get back to $1.30, which that compares to a year ago when we were selling cattle at $1.70 on the feed yard. So, you know, we're having to tone back our forecast and what we do. I would tell you that we think we're going to average $4 or $5 a hundred weight less next year than we did this year. You know, we're probably going to move into a range of 115 to 120 on the low side next year on fed cattle prices. High end of it probably in the 40s, hopefully the upper 40s, but it could be the low 140s. So the market is going through a significant shift in a hurry. And that, of course, with big feedlot losses that we're seeing right now, historically large, $400 head plus in many areas, trolling back to feeder cattle and calf prices. You know, not that we're going to go back to 2008, 2009 prices on calves anytime soon, but getting the prices that we've had over the last 16, 20 months probably is not going to happen, even with fairly cheap corn. We're just going to have to probably sell it for less till we get everything back and balance a little bit, get feedlots making some money, kind of get to our bearings again. So don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but we think it's going to be a bit of a struggle, but not going back anywhere where we were, primarily because of beef demand domestically and around the world. Yes?
You'd say that the U.S. cowherd's in an expansion phase and that will tighten supplies. What, shouldn't it be the opposite? Will increase supplies?
Yeah, that's why I made the point that no, tighten. This will be our tightest year, 2015. We will grow from it as we've gotten the weight so big and we've expanded so quick that, yes, this will be our tightest year. The next 2 and 3 years, in fact, we'll have bigger beef production in the U.S. Good eyes. What's that?
You should say it'll increase supply.
Correct. Yeah. They will not tighten. Yeah. Yes.
I want to compliment you on all the data that you presented.
Thank you.
Is there a portion of that data that can be broadly distributed to counter all of this anti-beef consumption that's going on? This recent study on red meat causing cancer, etc. How do we as an industry respond to that negative kind of connotation that's coming out of the media?
Yeah, it is tough. And I know for Cattle Facts, we're not with NCBA. We're not part of that organization, but we've been helping them present a lot of that data because you're right. Beef demand is extremely good. Beef consumption has been down because we haven't produced as much beef, right? We've grown our population, and we haven't grown as much beef, so consumption of beef is down. When you look at consumer spending on beef, it's actually record high and growing. So, you know, that's the story we're trying to get out there, and we're working through NCBA to try to get those facts and figures out to folks that didn't distribute it, because that's kind of what we do, is provide the numbers. So that's been the game plan, and you know, I wish it could be more effective than it is, and we have a lot of work to do, but we're going to keep pounding away at it.
Dwayne, I'm going to ask you a quick question. Earlier speakers this week are encouraging us to embrace all aspects of beef production, grass-fed and organic and whatnot. I'm just curious if you can just provide a perspective on currently what percentage of beef sales are in organic or grass-fed, and then also at what level might those markets get saturated? It doesn't look like they are now, but maybe what's just your prediction a little bit there?
Yeah, it's you know, when you take natural and grass-fed, they're kind of, we haven't seen any hard figures, but kind of what we've been able to put, I guess it depends on what side of the street you're on. Good news is that they doubled in the last few years. I guess the other side of the story is that the best we can figure out, you put that whole pile together, it's probably 5 to 7% of our production. Consumers say they want it, they're asking for it, they see a price associated with it, and then they say not so much. So, you know, it's something that they're asking for and trying to figure out, but the added price of consumption when they hits retail, then people kind of back away. But it is probably the fastest growing segment of the beef industry, but still long ways, in my mind, if you get the price deal figured out, long ways being saturated, but probably limits your growth, you know, until we get prices more in line with more traditional conventional beef.
Any other questions? All right, let's thank Dwayne for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
So this is wrapping up our program. I do have an important announcement. The winner of the Dectamax GeneMax Advantage Test was Harvey Fitzgerald from Hermosa, South Dakota. And I also want to warn you that's going to be the University